Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:39 Irish Summer Time. Today is Friday the 13th, June 13th. Well, this being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes, but let's first have a look at what's been happening this week. Well, this has been a week in which we saw a number of stock markets weaken and coming back towards their March lows, and it is now a question of whether they are going to post upward dynamics and reaffirm support at those January and March lows, or whether they're going to break below those levels. This was also a week in which we saw significant weakness in bank shares. A number of those shares have steadied in the last couple of days, but they are looking overstretched. So if we see a rally back above the January and March lows in the coming weeks, well, in the coming week, that would be quite bullish. On the other hand, if they continue to move south, then that is going to be a headwind for other stock markets, and well, for broader stock markets, I should say. And it is also the fact that bank shares have led on the downside throughout this move, and we've seen nothing to tell us that that trend hasn't changed in here right now. This was also a week in which we saw soft commodities, particularly the grains, becoming significantly stronger. That is on a quite a range of different bad news on the weather front in the US, where we have extremely heavy rain in the Midwest region, which is the primary corn and soybean growing region. And corn is up almost limit up again today. It's up 24 as I speak. It's above 700. It's at 763 and three quarters. Soybeans up at 1566, up 30 on the day. So this is rather important because it is feeding through into the inflationary fears, and the price of grains is a very obvious sign that commodities are pushing upwards. Cocoa is also doing very well. It's pushing up to new high ground. That's for a different weather reason. Actually, I think it's more tied with the fact that West African farmers can't afford pesticides and fertilizers. So the cocoa crop, although it may be larger this year, is going to be of worse quality. And that's pushing cocoa prices up. But the fact that the grains are moving on the upside, and there were a couple of days this week where the whole grain sector was limit up, is helping to pull up a lot of those other commodities. The oil price is also very close to its highs. It's at 134 today, down marginally, but has been back upwards towards the 139 level, which has marked the high. Heating oil and gasoline have also been testing their highs, but neither have actually moved to new high ground, to my knowledge. What we also see is that this has been a rock and roll week for precious metals, where silver came back and tested the $16 low, which marks the low for this range. Platinum and gold have done something similar and remain range bound at the moment, although for non-leveraged long investors, we're probably in a buying range at present. On the government bond markets, this was also a remarkably important week because we saw the Treasury bonds, which have been in a relatively, well, I would say a rivetingly consistent downtrend from those January highs. They broke down once more this week. They're down to 112, almost even right now, from the highs back in January, which were over 120. And that is a pattern that we're seeing mirrored right across the government bond complex. It's not just in the US, but also in the UK, in Euroland, in Japan, and in Australia. Those are the main markets that we cover in our daily click-through. They're all breaking on the downside. And while this is generally supportive of stock markets in this early stage because government bond prices are still quite high, government bond yields pushing on the upside is also a potential headwind for stock markets. And on the currency front, this was also a very important week for the dollar. The dollar broke above 74 on the dollar index, so breaking up to new recovery highs. Throughout the last 2 or 3 months, the dollar index has had a progression of higher lows. It's been enormously volatile this week, up 3 days in a row now, but down significantly at the beginning of the week. And it's finding support at progressively higher levels. It is beginning to look like this is an engineered recovery by the Fed and the Treasury in an aim, I think, to assuage fears that the dollar could go into a downward spiral from a number of other central banks. So, rather important move in the dollar this week. Looking at some of these themes longer term, let's just stay with currencies for the moment. Over the last couple of decades, when the dollar has reached major turning points, it has taken a long time to turn. I think a good analogy is that it takes an oil tanker a long time to turn because it's just so large, and the dollar is an enormous market. It's denominated the vast majority of commodities, the biggest capital market in the world, and of course, massive debt markets. So it takes the dollar a long time to turn around. But at the moment, we're seeing that there is demand returning at progressively higher levels that is bullish, at least in the short term, potentially in the medium term for the dollar. But all of those reasons to be bearish of the dollar are still intact. You still have massive deficits in the US. You still have masses of liquidity entering the markets. The dollar is being devalued constantly by the Treasury, or by the Fed, I should say, excuse me. And the amount of dollars in the world today is massively in excess of, or M3 is massively in excess of GDP growth. So there is the US economy is awash with liquidity at the moment. I suppose the reality is that that liquidity is probably not getting to the right people. I think Richard Russell said something very similar this week. But what we have at the moment is the fact that the dollar is rallying. And while there is still the potential that following this relatively good short to medium term rally, we could see that the dollar go back and test its lows, there's no evidence that that's going to happen right now. And as I said, all the reasons to be bearish of the dollar are still intact. So the chances are that this is a short to medium term move. A rallying dollar, and of course, let's not forget, we have that G8 summit this week. So that will be interesting to see whether we get any kind of comment from them about the value of the dollar. My hunch is that any comment they make is going to be fairly toothless, but we will see how things go in over the weekend. The stronger dollar is a headwind for commodity markets, but a stronger dollar is only a headwind. It doesn't negate the powerful supply and elasticity reasons for being long of commodities on a secular basis. A strong dollar is, though, a headwind for commodities, and commodities, particularly the energy complex, have been remarkably strong recently. So that could be a contributing factor to a little bit of weakness there, but probably not the only factor, and it probably will take a greater catalyst to pull back some of these important commodities. In the competitive world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency, but some countries want a weaker currency more than others. That has certainly been the US over the last 2 or 3 years, and the dollar had got to a level at which other central banks had become worried, and it is strengthening at the moment. But as I said, there is no country wants a strong currency, and we had increasingly seen politicians and business people and industrialists talking about the strength of the euro. In fact, I think the French finance minister today said that he was very happy with the dollar's weakness. Oh, sorry, the dollar's strength, excuse me. But given the fact that we haven't had runaway trends in the main reserve currencies, we have had the dollar becoming progressively weaker over the last 2 and 3 years, but not in the kind of accelerated moves that we've seen in other markets. And that's because for every dollar that the US is printing, there is a corresponding dollar being printed in a central bank, another central bank around the world. And while we can no longer see the M3 values for the US, we can see them for a number of other markets, and they're just about all printing money faster than GDP growth, and that is excess liquidity entering the markets. It's a competitive devaluation, in other words, of various currencies, and that is not going to end well. But nor is it going to end anytime soon. The credit crisis has increased the fear of deflation massively among central bankers, and they're much more afraid of deflation than they are of inflation. There's a perception that they can handle inflation by raising interest rates and choking off liquidity, but given the Japanese experience, they are enormously wary of allowing deflation to set in. So we've often described central bankers as being closet inflationists. Government bond yields, actually, just another word on the currencies. The reserve currencies of the world are probably not going to have secular runaway uptrends, but that's probably not the case for the Asian region. Following the Asian financial crisis, a number of those Asian currencies, the vast majority of them, in fact, were devalued quite considerably. And that is still very much the case. We see that the yuan in China is gradually being allowed to appreciate, and that is taking pressure off a number of those other Asian economies. The Singapore dollar is probably the strongest of the lot because they have the ambition of becoming the Switzerland of Asia, and they've gone a long way towards that with their banking secrecy laws and attracting private banking clients from India and China. So the Singapore dollar is a paragon of strength in the region, but other currencies are also being allowed to appreciate. This is in for at least one reason is to help combat inflation in those economies. The Indian rupee is a good example of that, but also it's rather expensive maintaining these soft pegs to the dollar. And allowing their currencies to appreciate is something to be welcomed. What we do see is that there is the potential in the Asian region for currencies to trend on a secular basis. And while the Asian dollar index has pulled back and is now in a larger correction than we've seen over the last 5 years, that secular trend is still very much in motion. And these currencies will be an important asset to anyone investing in that region for the longer term. The same can probably be said of the resources currencies, because these are massively cash generative, excuse me, economies, and interest rates will likely be higher there to try and tame inflation because of the fantastic growth that they are currently enjoying, and they are awash with cash. So the commodity currencies are also likely to benefit. The South African rand is probably an exception in that case, because when you look at that longer term chart, it does look like the South African rand is going to depreciate further over the medium to longer term. Because of the amount of liquidity that is being pumped into the markets following the current credit crisis. But this, of course, isn't the first time that liquidity has been pumped into the markets. They've been doing it for more than a decade, probably 2 decades. And every time there is any kind of deflationary fear, and it doesn't have to be events such as this current credit crisis or the Asian financial crisis or Y2K or 9/11 or the Nasdaq crash. But every time we see stock markets pulling back aggressively, then the liquidity taps are opened once more. This is massively inflationary. One of the most important charts out there, apart from the ratio of the Dow to gold over the very long term, which is one important chart, but another remarkably important chart is the long-term 10-year yield in the US, because yields bottomed in 2003. the amount of liquidity and the way that rates have been cut so remarkably aggressively, which I think was a necessary move, but it has also lengthened this credit crisis cycle. And we've seen just recently yields coming back and testing those 2003 lows. They found support above those lows, and now we see yields rallying quite aggressively and government bond prices coming back rather sharply. This has probably been the low for this reaction. What we can anticipate over the long term is that we will go through periods where inflation is going to be perceived as being a problem, and we're in one of those right now. But we will also go through times when inflation is not so much of a problem, and interest rates will come down in those periods. What we can anticipate occurring is that following the major reactions, government bond yields are going to find support at progressively higher levels. That has happened on this occasion. And when they start to rise, they're probably going to rise to levels above where they encountered resistance on the previous occasion. Higher lows in an uptrend are far more important than higher highs. And over time, and let's not forget that it took yields 23 years to go from top to bottom, and it could easily take that long and potentially even longer before we see yields topping out in this new inflationary cycle. That is something that is going to affect just about every economy in the world, and the US is certainly not going to be isolated. In periods where inflation becomes a problem, then stock markets are going to be under pressure because of rising interest rates and perceptions that yield will be king, and yield can be found better, or higher yields will be found easier in other asset classes. Commodities generally, secular bull markets in commodities generally coincide with secular bear markets in bond prices. We're now in a secular bear market in bond prices, and rallies in bond prices will be good shorting opportunities. But commodities generally do better in inflationary cycles. This is probably going to be the biggest commodity bull market in history, because the advent of 3 billion new consumers into the global economy just recently is something that cannot be overlooked. City planners in places like China and India have 20 and 30 year plans to build new cities, new infrastructure. China alone has moved 300 million people from rural areas into cities in the last 20 years, and they're aiming to do a similar number in the next 20 years. That means that they have to build entire new cities to house these people. They are concerned about creating full employment. That is one of the main aims of these massive population centers. But they're also very concerned with moving up the value chain. What we can anticipate is that the per capita consumption of commodities is going to rise in those countries as they develop. That provides an enormous opportunity not only for resources producing companies, but also for consumer companies that can provide these new consumers with exactly what they want. They aspire to the standard of living that we consider normal in the West, and there is every indication that 50 years from now they will have attained that goal. It's going to be a rocky road, and there will be large corrections, which by and large will be good buying opportunities. In commodity markets and in the emerging markets or progressing markets of the world, it has generally been unadvisable to pay up for these markets because they are prone to very large corrections, which have inevitably been buying opportunities in the last 5 to 6, 7 or 8 years. And I don't anticipate that changing anytime soon. There are a number of ways to play the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. Let's have a word first about supply and elasticity. We've been through a secular bear market in commodities, which coincided with the secular bull market in government bond prices. And That saw a large amount of talent leaving that industry because so many of those businesses went under. It means that the companies that survived were survivors, and they were concentrating on cutting their costs to the bone. Last time I was in China, at one of the markets, I got chatting to an American chap who is now running a business where he moves or where he sends millions of broken mobile phones to China to have them repaired and then sends them back to the US. But he told me that he originally started out as an oil engineer in a drilling company and lost his job 3 times in a row in the 90s in the space of 18 months, got sick of it, and decided to go into another business. That says one thing about the ingenuity and the enterprising nature of the American population, but it also tells us that he wasn't the only person who lost his job in drilling or in the mining sector. There were lots of people who are now doing other things, have enormous talent, and there is a dearth of people coming up who have degrees in geology and in the necessary skills that are needed for this industry. But it also means that there was very little exploration done because all money was ploughed into just keeping the business afloat. In a bear market, you mine the seams that are easiest to get at, and when things start to get better, you spend some money and you mine the ones that are more difficult to get at, and you leave the ones that are easiest to get at alone because you may need them again in the next bear market. It takes a long time for the psychology to change. It takes time for people to believe that we're in a new secular bull market. The first psychological perception stage of a new bull market is complete disbelief. The phrase that is attributed most to Donald Cox, where the people we get the seeds for the new bull market in the markets where those who know it best love it least because they've been disappointed the most. And that epitomized the resources sector before the last 5 years. We are probably now entering the second psychological perception stage of the bull market, where at the moment there is grudging acceptance that something important is happening in this sector. The key fundamental behind the supply side is that people have been just disinterested in the sector, and the big companies continue to concentrate more on taking each other over rather than expanding and creating new greenfield sites. It's greenfield sites which will expand global production, and the M&A activity is unlikely to change very much in this sector. That's the supply side. The demand side is based very much in Asia, but in those large population centers where we have massive infrastructure growth to accommodate the vast numbers of new young people that are entering the workforce having completed their education. And that is a trend we can anticipate continuing just by looking at demographics for the next 20, even 30 years. Following that, we will probably see that new workers entering the global economy will have less children, and the empowerment of women in the Western world has led to falling birth rates, and there is a good chance that that will also occur in Asia as women gain more power and more parity in terms of the type of work that they can do. That is going to be a long road. But that demand is there, and it is likely to persist for decades. And that is going to power the investment theme for the very long term. Investing directly in Asia is going to be one way to benefit from that GDP growth, from the growth in the consumer economy, and growth in the domestic stock markets of those countries. Investing in commodity producing countries is going to be another way to do that. And investing in the mining stocks listed in Europe or in the US or in Canada for that matter, is also another way of getting into this theme. And of course, buying the actual commodities is the other way to do it. Physical commodities are increasingly being seen as a store of value, and that is certainly helping the gold price to appreciate. Gold also does remarkably well when people no longer trust the value of the money in their pockets, and the fiat currencies of the world are being devalued quite steadily. That also paints a bullish picture for the precious metals over the long term. And that is certainly something that is not going to change anytime soon. And with that thought, I will leave you for the weekend, but have a great weekend, and I thank you very much for your time.